It took some time for Christy and Jack, assisted by Ryan, to lift the old man out and lay him on the sands. Mildred came over to check him almost immediately.
You okay to do this, Mildred?
I'm not totally there yet, but I'm good enough to check on this old buzzard anyway.
Doc's vital signs were good. Mildred hoped that the combined effects of the past few hours hadn't caused any lasting damage. He began to surface from his private dream, or nightmare. He opened his eyes and took in what was around. Remarkably, and with that facility that only Doc had to buck the odds, he seemed to be completely lucid.
Oh, by the three Kennedys, what a day this has been. Any more like that in a hurry, and I fear it shall see the last of me.
That's not the first time you've said that, Doc.
Nor shall it be the last. But we carry on, my dear Ryan, because we have to. The alternative is too fearful to contemplate.
Christy had been surveying the surrounding desert while Mildred tended to Doc, and Ryan joined her.
Not good, is it, lover? Nothing for as far as the eye can see, and nothing we can use as shelter. The only good thing, far as I can tell, is that we're completely alone.
Christy nodded slowly, and he noticed that her hair was waving independently of her sway, the sentient red tresses flicking like an irritated cat's tail, gathering close to her head instead of flowing free.
There's something, lover. I don't know what it is. I don't know where it comes from, but there's something out there that we'd do well to steer clear of.
Like what? It's like a graveyard out there. A killing field with nothing left alive.
Ryan was bewildered. It wasn't that he didn't trust her moody sense. How much trouble had it spared them in the past? How many imminent dangers had it alerted them to? But what could be out there in this void was completely beyond him.
Wish I could tell you. All I know is that it's there, whatever it is.
Checking that Doc was recuperating, Ryan organized a camp for the night, setting guard and putting himself and Jack on first watch. There was nothing with which to build a fire, so those that were sleeping huddled together for warmth in the freezing desert night, warming themselves with self-heats. The contents of the cans always tasted foul, but taste wasn't an issue. It was nutrition, and it was warming. That was all that mattered. They had no time to be fussy about the additive-soaked flavors of the ancient food. Despite the cold, the four not on guard duty soon found themselves falling into slumber, the rigors of the day and night catching up with them. It left Ryan and Jack alone with the darkness and the void.
What are our chances getting past this?
You tell me. No way to make a jump, no telling how far this stretches, and no telling which direction to take.
Tell you one thing. No, two. We're in the southeast, and we're not alone.
How the hell do you know that?
Stars, Ryan. I know the sky. Not quite the same, but not that different. We head out west in the morning. Then sooner or later, we hit swamps and water.
How far?
Dunno. Haven't seen this desert before. Maybe a day, maybe two, maybe more.
Have we got enough water and food to last?
They had used a lot of the water to counter the effects of dehydration after their ordeal leaving the redoubt. There were few bottles left, and they would have to ration them.
Wait, just a minute. What do you mean we're not on our own?
You're never alone in the desert. Come out at night, but driven down by storm. I can hear him getting near. Just wait.
Ryan frowned, but didn't push Jack for further explanation. Instead, he hunkered down next to the albino and decided to wait. He didn't have to wait long. As the two men crouched, still and silent, Ryan became aware of another sound that began to creep into his head from beyond the limits of normal hearing. He realized that this was what Jack had been hearing for a long time with his sharpened sense, heightened by years of hunting. Ryan inclined his head toward Jack. The albino met his gaze with a vulpine grin that grew ever wider. Ryan was on the verge of blurting out the question, what the hell was this? But his answer came to him with a sudden surprise. Spumes of sand shot up into the night. Suddenly, the pale desert floor was filled with dark shapes.
Always light, even in the desert.
As Ryan's eye adjusted to the shapes, he could see that there were lizards, spiders, beetles, and even a few skinny mammals that looked a little like hybrids between cats and rabbits. The shapes moved over and across one another, starting to engage in combat across the food chain. Ryan realized that the creatures were moving in the direction of the camp and whirled to look behind him. There were none to their rear, just an empty expanse.
What the hell is going on?
Figure we're uphill. The sand's deeper where they nest. Maybe they're telling us where there's water.
That's if they're not headed for us because we're a strange scent.
Ryan turned to the sleeping travelers, but could see that the noise had penetrated their rest, and they were beginning to waken.
Ryan, what? Dark night. What the fuck is that?
That's trouble, JB. Triple Red people. We need to get moving, and fast.
We should take some out. We could use the food.
Yeah, maybe that's how they see us. They're not much on their own, but there's thousands of the bastards. And we're not exactly up to full strength.
Jack pointed beyond where the initial mass of creatures had come from. In the distance, the sands were exploding, as more nests were stirring.
Upon my soul, it's almost biblical. The plagues came down upon the deserts, and...
Yeah, some other time, Doc, or else you're gonna be a lizard's next meal. Why the hell are they all coming this way?
It doesn't matter. We need to outrun these little bastards before they overwhelm us. Just keep one step ahead of them.
They wasted no more words on speculation, but instead devoted their energy to outrunning the mass of desert life that was closing on them. They were still exhausted, having had no real chance to rest, and the sand was of an erratic depth and consistency, in some places loose and clinging, in others relatively hard and compacted. For every step forward that seemed to buy them distance, there was another where a step meant sinking halfway up to the calf in the clinging sand, tugging insistently at them as they freed themselves. Looking over his shoulder, Ryan could see that the menagerie was gaining on them. He couldn't tell if they were on an uphill gradient. Certainly the struggle suggested this, but with their fatigue and the erratic depths of the desert to impede them, it was almost impossible to tell. Doc was exhausted and was already falling behind, despite the efforts of Mildred and JB to assist him. Without warning, JB took a step forward and was swallowed up to the waist in a sudden cave-in. His heel hit something hard, and the jarring traveled up his hip. Obviously, there was some kind of rock shelf underneath, and that was what he hit. But it wasn't all. He was surrounded by a squealing, yelping mass of fur and teeth that scrambled to get free of the collapse, using JB's body as purchase for escape.
Oh my God!
The creatures were swarming over the desert floor, scuttling around and over Mildred's feet. Some of them pitched up to her calves to cling for safety. Rats with slick black fur and red pinpoint eyes, large teeth and sharp claws, threatening in their mass. The travelers now found themselves caught in a territorial war, a struggle for supremacy between the rats and the other life forms that inhabited the desert wastes. It may even have been a nightly occurrence. Their warren violated by the unfortunate step of the armorer, the rats had fled in panic and were now charging headlong toward their foes, regardless of who was in the way. They swarmed over Doc, the mass of them catching him around the calves and shins, making his knees buckle under their force. He thrashed at them with his silver lion's head cane. Ryan, Jack, and Christy moved back toward where Doc struggled, and Mildred was trying desperately to help JB out of the hole made by his fall. He was buried up to his thighs. Some of the rats had reached the mammals, lizards, and insects swarming over the sand, and a fresh skirmish had commenced between them. More rats broke the surface of the dune, those still left in the other parts of the warren, spreading like a sentient carpet over the surface of the sand. They swarmed toward the travelers. The reptiles, with their toughened hides, were coping well against the rats, their tails flicking and breaking the spines of the furry marauders, their tongues wrapping around the creatures and wringing the air from them as the bites of the rodents failed to penetrate the toughened scales. Yet some of the rodents were making their own progress. Masses of them could chill a lizard by swarming it, the sheer mass of bites getting through the hide, making the creature turn so that its soft underbelly was exposed, an easier target for the razor-sharp teeth. The insects, although smaller and easily swallowed, or crushed by the weight of the rats en masse, had their own weapons to offer. Venom from their shells or from their mouths and pincers pierced the rats' flesh, making them writhe in agony. It was almost impossible to dig out JB, as the second wave of vermin flowed over the dune towards the larger melee. The rats snapped at Jack's and Mildred's hands as they attempted to free the armorer. Ryan and Christy reached Doc and helped the old man steady himself as he swiped at the rats with his cane. Together, the three of them began to move toward Jack and Mildred. Ryan drew his panga from its thigh sheath, and he and Doc set about carving some space around the area where JB was trapped. While they did this, Christy joined Mildred and Jack in helping to dig the armorer out of the hole. They still had to fend off the occasional rodent, but the vast majority was now engaged in the struggle for survival just below them, and those that still lingered were, for the most part, deflected by the blows of Ryan and Doc.
Oh, what a pipe to blow!
What?
A long story, and one that I shall tell you when it becomes more provident, though it could hardly be more appropriate.
God! God damn it! Jesus! God!
JB struggled out of the sandpit, shaking himself, still feeling the rats scurrying over him. He turned to look at the carnage and stopped dead, silenced by the battle that was still raging. The travelers watched, spectators who were glad to be no longer caught in the middle, as the fight continued. The small mammals were no match for the rats, and most of them were either chilled or retreating, but the match between the lizards and insects on one side and the rodents on the other was evenly balanced. Both had their weaknesses, but their strengths contrasted and evened up the fight. It was truly something to witness, the struggle for desert supremacy. And the struggle was brought to an end only when the sun began to rise. The knowledge that the day would soon become unbearably hot sent them fleeing back to their holes. The battle for supremacy could wait until another night. Ryan wondered how often this had been played. The rats swarmed around the travelers but seemed to ignore them, heading only for their warren, bearing the carrion from the battlefield with them to add to their supplies of food. Receding into the distance, the lizards and reptiles were doing the same. Nothing was to be wasted. The desert was silent once more, with only the disturbance of the sand and some patches of blood and fur to mark the battle. Even those would soon vanish with the shifting of the sands.
Well, not much chance of resting now. I don't know about you, but I don't want another night like that if I can help it. I say we press on.
Nobody objected. Ryan told JB of Jack's comments about their location and the best direction to strike out. The armorer took his mini-sextant from his canvas bag and took a reading.
Yeah, if we head west, then we should hit where Jack says. I just wish I could say how long it'll take.
It'll take as long as it takes. We've got no other choice.
Wearily, they formed into a line, with Ryan at lead and JB covering the rear, and began to march slowly, achingly, toward whatever destiny next had in store for them.
3 days and nights. Let us hope that it does not extend to 40 in this wilderness.
Certainly something had happened to Doc in the time between coming out of the jump and the current morning. His familiar ramblings had taken on a decided religious tone since they'd begun their trek across the desert. After the attack on their first night out of the redoubt, and after JB had secured a direction from his mini-sextant, they started to march. Determining the proper pace was difficult. It was an unknown distance, balanced against their lack of water and salt tablets, and the sparseness of their diet. The fact that there was water and life present in the desert was a given. The events of that night had proven it. However, locating the obviously buried springs and trapping some of the wildlife was another matter entirely. The chem clouds, trapping and magnifying the intensity of the heat, set the pace for them. Regardless of any intent, to go any faster would have been suicide, exhausting their water and salt supply. So they had kept the pace steady and set camp for the night as the darkness fell, settling in against the freezing temperatures of a desert night. Away from the storm-ravaged area, the wildlife had been less intent on a power struggle and had emerged slowly, with more caution and less obvious hostility. That made it easy for Jack to trap a few lizards and small mammals that strayed away from the safety of the pack. At the same time, the albino hunter observed their patterns of movement, attempting to divine where the water table came up through the sand and rock beneath, to be close enough to the surface for the travelers to attempt to dig. He wasn't so successful at that. The layers of sand kept the wells and springs of the desert running deep. However, a brief search did reveal more signs of scrub and plant life than before. Meanwhile, JB and Ryan rigged their own device to try to squeeze a little water from the unwelcoming desert. Using some plastic wrap that had been on some of the materials taken from the redoubt, they built small hammocks that collected the dew in their centers. The resulting water was brackish, but at least it showed that they could attempt to prolong their survival in this manner. Mildred and Christy collected some of the scrub as they marched each day. It was few and far between, and mostly tinder dry. Although not encouraging for the presence of water, it did signify that there was something present, and at the end of each day it meant that they had enough to build a fire that could keep burning through the night, offering warmth and a warning to any wildlife that might be too bold. It also meant that they could preserve the self-heats for a real emergency, and the salty meat enabled them to cut back a little on the consumption of the salt tablets, another commodity they might have to retain for an emergency. It took only 2 days for the travelers to settle into a routine, and by the third day it seemed as though they had been marching forever. It was partly because their bodies were beginning to adjust to the conditions of the environment, and partly because they had no time scale, and so lived completely in the moment. Jack finished chewing on a piece of lizard meat and choked it down. It was tough, with little taste, but at least it didn't have the chem taste of the self-eats.
Getting closer. More life. Look at that. Even from here, you can see more green.
Yeah. Maybe we haven't got too far to go, then.
JB looked up at the early morning sun. There was less of the heavy yellow chem cloud cover, and the blue sky shone through. As the sun rose, the heat would inevitably beat down, but it would be easier to deal with for the lack of chem clouds. So it was with a refreshed spirit that they pressed on. There was a spring in their step that they had to fight to suppress. Too much energy expended too quickly would be of no help to them if the prize was farther than they thought. It was past midday when the breakthrough happened. There had been an increase in the amount of scrub, and just before the sun reached its peak, Jack had stopped them with a gesture, pointing up into the clear blue. There, soaring in an arc against the blue, was a dark shape with a long wingspan. It was the first bird they had seen since leaving the redoubt, and an indication that taller plants and trees lay somewhere close by. The edge of the desert was delineated in an odd way. They had seen many bizarre land formations in their travels, but this was one of the strangest. For some time it had seemed to them that they were moving uphill once more, the sand lifting up before them in a series of dunes that grew higher. Though the sand was harder packed and firmer underfoot, the gradient was enough to pull at their calf muscles. It was an effort to keep up the pace, so they slowed to make the ascent easier.